Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Do you know a student getting ready to go to college? Or are you looking at going back to school yourself? The Woodward Hines Education Foundation and the Get to College program help more Mississippians get to and through college to get certificates and degrees that lead to meaningful employment. They offer free college planning advice, including hands-on FAFSA completion assistance through in-person or virtual appointments. Visit gettocollege.org to learn more.
Good morning. It's 8:30 on Tuesday, March 12th. I'm Desiree Frazier. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. On today's show, voters go to the polls for Mississippi primary elections. Then Alabama lawmakers try to legalize gambling in the state, but there have been some bumps in the road for years. Plus, forecasters say the impact of last year's drought remains and could affect the state during this year's dry season. Excuse me. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. Polls are open until 7 p.m. today for voters to cast their ballots for party primary elections. Turnout is expected to be low, according to the Secretary of State, based on the number of absentee ballots cast at about 19,000. But party leaders say it's still important for folks to go to the polls. Luchin Smith is former chair of the Mississippi Republican Party. He tells our Kobe Vance one of the most competitive races this year is between incumbent Republican Senator Roger Wicker of Pontotoc and his two challengers, Dan Eubanks of Walls, a state representative, and Colonel Gannon Burton of Dennis.
Anytime you're in a primary, the question is going to be who is the most conservative, and you've seen a lot of that in the campaigning. Senator Wicker, who's the incumbent, Roger Wicker's got two opponents, and both Colonel Burton and Representative Eubanks have tried to make themselves the more conservative candidate, but that's generally going to be what Republican primary voters are going to be asking themselves when they go to the polls.
What are your thoughts on voters also considering factors around, you know, while it's certainly important for those voters to consider who's the more conservative, but there's also the seniority that Senator Wicker has in Congress when it comes to his ability to, you know, make significant changes and weigh in on Mississippi's behalf?
And that's one of several reasons why I think Roger's going to be very successful. I think Senator Wicker is going to win. I think he's going to win with big numbers, and it is in no small part because of how effective he has been as a senator. He was ranked as one of the most effective senators in a report that came out in the last several weeks. He has President Trump's endorsement, which I think inoculates him on the right, which is really going to prevent his opponents from getting any traction. But he's also just been very effective for Mississippi. He's in line to be the chairman of the Armed Services Committee if the Republicans take back the Senate in November. And so he is going to be, he already is in a position, but will be in an even greater position to do great work for the state of Mississippi. And that's not something either of his opponents are going to be able to claim.
Now, something else that I wanted to talk about is the Republican primaries for president. Right now, Mississippi will have on the ballot Nikki Haley, but she has since dropped out of the race. Do you think that's going to confuse voters?
I think it's going to cause lower turnout. I mean, one thing that makes this week complicated is for a lot of the state, it is spring break. And so the biggest message, I think, for everybody, whoever you're for, is remember to go vote today if you haven't already. But I think that you will certainly have some people who will wonder why she's still on the ballot, but I don't think it's going to cause any voting problems. I think Donald Trump was going to get above 90% in Mississippi when she was an active candidate, and he will get about the same amount. I think you'll still have a few people who show up and are protest voters, but it's going to be a relatively small number.
On the topic of protest voters, you know, there's been some fair criticisms raised to either party right now. Incumbent Joe Biden is a President Joe Biden. He is facing criticisms from his party that he might not be up to the mental acuity of what a president should be. Meanwhile, you have a former President Donald Trump's part. He is facing the indictments. Do you think, looking forward, this is going to be a particularly interesting year for the parties as they're trying to both overcome those obstacles and try to campaign against the other party?
Well, you asked me early on what are Republican primary voters thinking about when they show up for the primary. I think it's safe to say that this year neither Republican nor Democratic primary voters in the presidential election were focused on electability as the primary criterion for choosing their candidates. I think we've both selected candidates with massive vulnerabilities, and if you were picking a candidate based on who was most likely to win a general election, I think we'd have two different nominees.
This will be on the presidential election cycle as well. It'll be a rematch for the two, President Biden and former President Trump. Do you think they'll be seeing the same conversations come up, or do you think enough has changed and enough has happened since Trump's last race that we'll be seeing some, I guess, different environments?
My hope is what we're going to see is a discussion about policy, because I think when the Republicans focus on policy, we tend to be effective. When the Democrats are able to make a race about personality and narrative, they tend to be successful. So my hope is that Donald Trump and his team will exercise a discipline and message where the focus is not about demonizing. It's about what the policies that took place during the Trump administration were and the ways in which those policies positively affected Americans. Because I think if that is our message, if we talk about economics, if we talk about the crisis at the border, if we talk about tax policy, those are things that I think will be a positive working message for Republicans that will cause electoral success. If we let this become a personal match, it becomes much more of a toss-up.
And then lastly, do you have any word for voters who maybe might not be very motivated today to go out to vote? What would be your advice to them?
Get out and do it. You really don't have any right to complain unless you show up today and pick your candidate. Whoever you're for, you need to get out there. And men and women have died for centuries so that we've got the ability to go and vote and choose who leads us. And you need to take advantage of that right and go out and vote.
Lucian Smith, former GOP chair from Mississippi, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Kobe.
While the Republican ballot has a few competitive races, the Democratic Party is mostly single-candidate options. Despite that, Democratic Party Chair Sheck Taylor of Starkville says voters should still go to the polls today.
Number one is the civic duty that we must exercise for those who care about our future and our state economy, those who care about health care, those who care about public education, those who care about how young people, how young adults actually are benefited from the policies. This is the time to go vote. This is the time to actually get this done. Now, luckily for us, our primaries are not being challenged. They're uncontested races. But they're very important. We have, of course, presidential race. We have Congressman Thompson's race. We have Todd Pickens, who's our senatorial hopeful, U.S. senatorial hopeful. And we have a House race as well, and things of that nature. So this is an opportunity for us to go back. But even more importantly than voting, I wanted to talk a bit about the delegate selection plan and also Mississippians having a chance through the delegate selection process to actually shape the narrative of the agenda of the national agenda for the Democratic Party.
Gotcha. Yeah, if you'd like, we can go into that.
Yes. Because to be honest, the primaries are, lack of a better word, they're going to be a little lackluster because they're not being challenged. So we're going to be concentrating on the general election. But the road to Chicago is going to be phenomenal. So we just had our first training for our congressional districts, for our county districts. So we've had delegate selection plan to start with our, and that leads us up to our congressional district convention, which will be the week of April the 6th through the 27th, depending on what congressional district you're in. Then next, our state convention will be here in Jackson, May 25th. And then our Democratic National Convention will be August 19th through 22nd in Chicago. So what's so, the thing that is so important about all of this is the ability. A lot of times there's this dissociation between national politics and Mississippi politics. And for the Democrats, or for those Democrats in the state of Mississippi that may be in lockstep or have some things to add to that agenda, this is an opportunity to do so. And the only way that you get there, the only way that you have influence in doing that, is having that delegate selection process that I just mentioned to you. One thing that I've learned, and I've actually had a chance to go through two walkthroughs. All of this planning is to make sure that Mississippians are well accommodated. But look, we started off years ago being at probably the Super 8 Motel, and now we're in a Grand Hyatt as Mississippians, just because of how things were structured. So we are a full-fledged, recognized state now, as far as the DNC is concerned. And I would like to attribute that to the work of our volunteers, to the work of our executive directors, our 80-member board, executive committee board, and also our administrative board, who've done yeoman work. And all this is volunteer, of course. But they've made a lot of sacrifices so that the party is organized and the party is ready to act. This is not the party of yesteryear.
Sarge, I want to go back to the primaries real quick. Do you have any concerns that Democrats are going to feel like they have less of a voice this year, at least during the primary elections, since we have so all the races are going to be, I guess, coming down to single candidates?
Well, I don't know about less of a voice. I think when you don't have opponents in primaries, it gives you an opportunity to actually strategize for the general. It gives you a chance to raise money, to work on your messaging pieces and things like that. A lot of times what happens in primaries, if it's heavily contested, you're so beat up by the time you're in that process, you're probably not on great footing when it goes into the general. So this is actually good news. Usually if there's uncontested races in the primary, that means that there's been conversations to make sure that the best candidate is in the race. There have been strategic moves to make sure that we have the right candidates in the race. So this speaks more towards organization than dysfunction.
And how do you think that fits into what you just mentioned as Mississippi having a bigger seat at the table at the National Democratic Convention?
Mm-hmm. Well, what it does is puts, it's been well documented our former woes with leadership, former leadership. And I say that very gracefully. I'm not trying to cast a disparaging shadow on former leadership, but it just is what it is. We're in a much better position now. We're in a much better position now with interaction with the DNC. And Mississippi is actually one of the states that is seems to be in high demand when it comes to even speaking engagements and listening to the voices of what's happening in Mississippians. And that's because of the Presley race with Tate Reeves. That's because of some of the scandals that has happened here in Jackson when it came to DHS. Here in Mississippi, we're making national news whether we want to or not. Now we have the cannon fodder. Now we're equipped with an apparatus that would actually spread our message around the nation instead of just inside the four walls of Mississippi. So to that point, during the campaign season last November, we had other states helping us fundraise as a Democratic Party through online type of apparatuses, Zoom links with Colorado, New Mexico, Nevada, places like that. And so there is a definite interest on the goings-on in Mississippi to make sure that we get it right.
Well, Representative Sheck Taylor, you're also the chair of the Mississippi Democratic Party. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate you talking with us.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, Alabama lawmakers trying to legalize gambling in the state, but there have been many speed bumps in the years. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
Hi, Larry Morrissey with the Mississippi Arts Commission. Please join me and my colleagues for the Mississippi Arts Hour, where we have in-depth conversations with different creative Mississippians. That's the Mississippi Arts Hour, Sundays at 5 on Think Radio, or download it as a podcast.
Mississippi Antique Showcase is coming to Natchez, Mississippi, Friday, May 3rd and Saturday, May 4th. We'll have professional appraisers on site evaluating antiques, furniture, and treasured keepsakes. For a one-time gift of $100, you'll receive one ticket, complimentary food, cocktails, and a single item appraisal. Call 1-844-874-6874 or go to mpbonline.org to reserve your spot now.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. An effort to legalize some forms of gambling is underway in Alabama. The issue has fallen short for decades. This year's plan has run into stiff opposition as well. What could legal sports betting look like in the state? Well, Joseph King with the Gulf States Newsroom goes to neighboring states that have already taken the leap to find out more.
It's mid-February, and dozens of people are packed into Ghost Train Brewing in Birmingham, Alabama, watching Super Bowl 58. Something like 68 million sports fans across the world bet on this year's Super Bowl. Many, like George Musto, use sports betting apps on their phones.
I'm a Detroit Lions fan.
But the Lions are not playing today, so...
I put money on the Chiefs because I can afford to bet on the Chiefs right now. And I think that's what it should be all about, is enjoying the excitement, being able to make an extra source of income, and make yourself more excited while watching the game.
Now, this kind of sports betting in Alabama is not exactly legal, but that hasn't stopped people from trying. According to the popular online gambling company FanDuel, they blocked at least 2 million attempts by Alabamians to place online sports bets in 2023. Nick Coleman, who is sitting a little ways away at the bar, says... he thinks it should be legal, and he's going to do it anyway.
100%. I wouldn't necessarily say it's a sin, but, I mean, to each his own. If that's what I want to do, let me do it, you feel me?
He says it's about time Alabama catches up with other states.
At least put the power in the hands of the people in the state to choose if that's what they want to do.
Coleman's opinion is shared by a lot of people, not only in Alabama, but in the Deep South as a whole. That includes Alabama's governor, Kay Ivey. During her most recent State of the State address, she announced her support for a gaming bill that's making its way through the legislature.
I believe the current proposal being contemplated by the legislature is good for Alabama.
That version of the bill would have brought the lottery, casinos, and sports betting to the state. Now, that bill has been slimmed down. Lawmakers even pulled sports betting out of it recently, and it's still not clear if it will make it to the finish line, even with the governor's support. If it does, it will put the issues in front of voters in a special election in the fall. This is not the first effort to legalize sports betting in Alabama. Supporters of the bill say the state is leaving millions of dollars in tax revenue on the table. Take Louisiana, for example, which began allowing online sports betting in 2021.
It's just a crazy number. It's much bigger than what we had anticipated.
Ronnie Johns is the chairman of the Louisiana Gaming Control Board. He says since the inception of sports betting, over $5 billion have been wagered in the state. Johns says that has generated around $85 million for Louisiana. Those funds are used on things like early childhood education, local government, and towards treatment for people suffering from compulsive gambling.
We're one of the very few states in America that actually maintains a public facility for compulsive gamblers where at no cost to them, they can get treatment. And then a lot of it's also done outpatient. But we fund a lot of that through our gaming taxes, sports betting, as well as the casino proceeds go into compulsive gambling programs.
Gambling addiction is something people who oppose Alabama's attempt to legalize sports betting bring up a lot. The current version of the state's gambling bill will set some money aside to help people deal with that. The latest version of Alabama's bill has a long way to go, so it definitely won't pass in time for the NCAA Men's Division I basketball tournament, better known as March Madness, later this month. Last year, an estimated $15 billion was likely wagered during the tournament. And much like the Super Bowl, it's pretty much guaranteed that gamblers in Alabama are going to be in that mix, whether it's legal or not. For the Gulf States Newsroom, I'm Joseph King.
The Gulf States Newsroom is a partnership with Mississippi Public Broadcasting and public radio stations in Alabama and Louisiana. Coming up, forecasters say the impact of last year's drought remains and could affect this year's dry season. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
Hi, Larry Morrissey with the Mississippi Arts Commission. Please join me and my colleagues for the Mississippi Arts Hour, where we have in-depth conversations with different creative Mississippians. That's the Mississippi Arts Hour, Sundays at 5 on Think Radio, or download it as a podcast.
Thanks to our sustaining members who provide ongoing monthly financial support. You can become a sustainer too. Go to mpbonline.org and click Donate Now at the top of the page.
This is MPB Think Radio, Mississippi Public Broadcasting.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. Rain has become a welcome sight for many these last few weeks, and farmers are still facing the lasting effects of the drought from late last year, if you recall. Wildland firefighters responded to more than 1,400 fires in the state since August of 2023. Over 20,000 acres burned. Our Mike McEwen speaks with Mike Hill, a warning forecaster with the National Weather Service in Jackson. He shares how current rainy conditions are helping and if it will be enough to protect foliage for the upcoming dry season.
It was a fairly prolonged drought. We've had drought conditions, starting for most of Mississippi. They started around August, but once we moved into September and really into October and November, that's when the drought got really bad for our area. So the Forestry Commission responded to more than 1,400 fires since August 23, with 600 of those fires being in October. So they had 600 responses in October of 23, and more than 20,000 acres have burned across the state as of November 1st, 2023. There were a lot of dead trees. There still are a lot of dead trees, and we're feeling the impacts of that, especially agriculture-wise and in the pine tree, lumber business. There are over 12.5 million dead trees, roughly at 159 trees per acre. So we're dealing with a lot of issues in the lumber field. And so those dead trees are nothing but kindling, for the fires if we go into another drought this year. It was a really devastating drought, especially in the lumber and agriculture fields.
So I know the drought itself was out of the typical norm, but is it normally dry that part of the year in Mississippi, or is that normally the wet season?
No, it's normally about the dry season, to be honest. Anywhere between June through October is generally your dry season. On record, generally October is one of the drier months, but it just kind of lined up where it was meteorologically. We had high pressure over the area, and once we get high pressure over the area, it gets really hot and it dries out really quick. And so we were already going into our climatologically dry season. It just kind of compounded there.
It was extremely dry for several months. We've received some recent rainfall. How has that changed conditions out there, if at all?
Right now, we're not in a drought because we have had plenty of rainfall. We're going to get another couple, 3, maybe 4 inches over the next week or so going into this weekend. So I was looking at some of the numbers. We're already kind of at a surplus. We're a little bit ahead of schedule as far as rain is concerned for the Jackson area. So that's good. We're building that back up. It still doesn't, help for real as far as the, dead trees, because they're already dead. Anything that's resilient enough to come back is going to start to come back.
Are there any lasting impacts on an area that was under a drought, both as dry, as hot, and as long as Mississippi was last year?
I mean, of course, again, it's the agriculture part of it, how the forests and, the lumber companies or lumber crop, how does that recover? That's going to be lasting because they lost a lot of trees, and some of the forest lost a lot of trees. So it's just going to take time to recoup that loss of tree and loss of lumber And so it's just one of those things that we will feel the lasting impacts on that, so, you know, the lumber and some of the agricultural cotton and, you know, crops that had an issue that, you know, that played a part in it. So we will see some impacts from it, but hopefully we'll bounce back over time.
Mike Hill is a warning forecaster at the National Weather Service in Jackson. This has been Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.